And welcome into a very special Falcon Zone. We're going to be joined very shortly by Warren Moon. We're actually waiting on that connection. But before we get the chance to do that, I want to tell you guys that on with us live right now, we got the King ATL and Reggie Walker. We've got the Coach Haywood Hill. And we've got Cody the Crusher Elias. How we doing, guys?
Doing great.
Doing well, Jeremy.
Doing well, Jeremy. Everything's well here on the West Coast.
Yeah, you got to hold down the fort out there. I know. But, yeah, we're waiting to hear from Warren here in a second. So, you know, we'll obviously get to that. We do have Sean Sharif from 105.3 The Fan, also known as the voice of the Dallas Metroplex, joining us in about 30 minutes or so. Tons of fun things we're going to get into today. We're going to kind of recap and go over all four of those games from the weekend. We're going to preview the four coming up. Anybody do anything fun this week?
I didn't do a whole lot. I mean, other than kind of the friendly banter that I've been having with a lot of the Seahawks fans throughout the week, I think that's probably been the highlight of my week so far. Saturday, you know, typically it takes forever, you know, very quick to get to a Friday and then even quicker to get back to a Monday. But for whatever reason, we just can't get to Saturday fast enough for me, man.
Cool. Before you guys get in, let me see if we got him on the line here. Warren, are you with us?
Yeah, I've been waiting on you. I've been sitting
here. Awesome. Sorry about that. We were trying to figure out all the specifics here. But I guess I need to give you the proper introduction and say that joining us right now, he is not only a Hall of Fame quarterback from the NFL, not only is he the color analyst for the Seahawks Radio Network, but he is the only five-time Grey Cup winner we've ever had on the show. He, of course, is Warren Moon. So how are things out in Seattle there, Warren?
You know, it's cold, but everybody's excited about the playoffs. They're excited about taking that next step, going to Atlanta, playing against a really good Atlanta team that, you know, finished the season strong, and now they're rested and ready to play us. But we're already in playoff mode. We have a game under our belt. So this team has a lot of playoff experience, been to a few Super Bowls, been deep in the playoffs. So they feel like they're ready to take on this challenge.
Definitely so. And, you know, it's another matchup. We've seen the Falcons and Seahawks play just earlier this year. Do you kind of see this matchup playing off the same way, or do you think things could tip in the other direction?
Well, I hope it plays out the same way because we won that first game, and it was a tight football game. I think we won 26-22. They took the lead in the third quarter, but we came back and went ahead, and it was a back-and-forth ball game. They have a very potent offense. Matt Ryan, who's probably going to be the MVP of the league this season, has a ton of weapons to throw the football to, and he spreads it all around the field. And they've improved constantly throughout the year on defense. So they're a good football team, and we're a good football team, and that's why we're both in the playoffs.
Hey, Warren, this is Reggie Walker. First of all, it's a pleasure to be on with you. Got a question about just from if you put your analyst hat on and you take a look at both teams. I mean, we know what Atlanta brings the offense against the number one defense, but there's been a lot of conversation about Earl Thomas being missing. What is it that you feel like Seattle can do and bring to the table to kind of slow down this offense?
Well, when Earl's back there, he makes up for so many mistakes. If your guy gets beat, he has the ability with his speed and his instincts to get over and help, you know, make up for those mistakes. He's a guy that, because of his instincts, he gambles every now and then and jumps on some routes that other safeties wouldn't jump on, and he makes plays on those balls. He's very, very aggressive at the line of scrimmage. You know, he comes up like a rocket because he's so fast going either backwards or coming forward, and he comes up and makes a lot of tackles around the line of scrimmage. So you can't really replace the playmaker that we lose in him, but Stephen Terrell, his backup who's playing in his place, as long as he plays our defenses the way they're supposed to be played, maybe he's not going to gamble as much as Earl does, but as long as he's not getting beat deep, if he's supposed to be the deepest man and that type of thing, you know, we've got some really talented players on our defense. You know, we got four Pro Bowlers up there on this defense and a lot of experience. So as long as everybody plays their role, we have a chance to slow this team down a little bit.
Hey, Warren, this is Cody from 95.7 The Game in San Francisco. I'm Lorenzo's producer, so it's nice to actually be on the other side of the conversation where I actually get to ask you something instead of just asking to come on the program with my guys. So I want to ask you, you know, the Seahawks rushing attack has been area of concern all season long. But last week, Thomas Rawls had the big game against Detroit. Has it been the offensive line, the combinations this year that have kind of been the issue for the rushing attack? Because, Christine Michael was cut earlier in the season. He was a leading rusher, and Rawls was being hurt. But has been the offensive line been the reason why the rushing attack has been, back on track, with Rawls having 160 yards rushing last week against the Lions?
Yeah, it's been a combination. It's been the offensive line's inexperience and their lack of being able to, play together and create that continuity that you want an offensive line to have, because it takes those guys playing together over a period of time in order to get that communication and that timing in the blocking scheme for running the football. And our guys have been not only inexperienced but also injured. There's been guys in and out of the lineup, so those guys haven't played a lot together. And then we've been injured at the running back position as well. Thomas Rawls has been in and out of the lineup because of injuries. C.J. Prosite, who may play this week, he's another guy that we really relied on earlier in the season, but he got hurt in training camp, and he's missed a ton of games this year. So all those guys are healthy now. Our offensive line has been playing together now for the last 4 weeks, and they seem to be getting better each and every week. So that's all we can ask for at this time of the year, for them to be playing their best football and for us to be as healthy as we've been all year long.
Hi, Warren. This is Coach Hazel Hill. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I have a quick question for you. As we know, the NFL is all about matchups. And with Atlanta having a plethora of receivers, how do you see this defense matching up with all of the weapons that they have as far as their receiving core is concerned, including the tight ends?
I like the way we match up against them because we have two really good corners on the outside, Deshaun Shedd and also Richard Sherman. Jeremy Lane has really done a nice job as our nickelback over the last couple of years. I think the big matchup is going to come, with their running backs against our linebackers, Bobby Wagner and K.J. Wright. Those two running backs are very, very explosive out of the backfield. You can dump the ball off to them, and they can make one guy miss, and all of a sudden they're off and running in the secondary. So it's going to be a big key for us to tackle well in this game. We know Matt Ryan's going to complete passes. He's a very accurate passer. He knows where to go with the football, but we have to make tackles when those guys do make catches, because if you break a tackle, now all of a sudden people running man for man and you got a guy free who's broken a tackle, that's when they make their big chunk plays in the back end. So our pass rush is going to have a lot to do with all of that, because you want to try and put as much pressure on Matt early in the game as you possibly can. Try and get him uncomfortable, get him off of his perch, make him move around a little bit. And if we can do that with the guys up front, that'll make the guys in the back end's job a little bit easier.
Now, of course, as I said, we are joined by Hall of Famer Warren Moon in the Falcon Zone. Warren, when you look at these two quarterbacks, what do you really like that both Russell and Matt do? And then is there some kind of chinks in the armor that you think the opposing defenses can take advantage of?
Well, what I like about Matt is he's a great play-action faker. He comes off of those fakes and is ready to throw it and knows exactly where to let it go. And it's very difficult in play-action sometimes, because as a quarterback, you got to take your eye off the defense to make the good fake, and then you got to get those eyes right back on the secondary to figure out the coverage that they're in. He does a great job of doing that and recognizing what those coverages are and gets the ball to the right guy most of the time. I mean, he's somewhere around, a 70% passer, so like I said, he'll dump the ball off, he'll throw it short, he'll throw it intermediate, which a lot of quarterbacks don't do anymore, in that 15 to 25-yard range, and then he'll also take the strikes down the field. So he does a lot of good things in the passing game, makes you have to defend the whole football field. One of the things is his weakness is getting pressure on him and hitting him early in the ball game. He's had a tendency over the course of his career, if you can hit him early and get him uncomfortable, his feet start moving and all of a sudden his mechanics, suffer a little bit. So that's what you want to do if you're the Seahawks defensive front, is get that pressure on him early in the ball game. For Russell Wilson, he's finally healthy as far as his legs are concerned. He's had a lot of injuries with his legs, with an ankle and also a knee. And now he's taken off his knee brace, and he's a guy that can move around in the pocket and make things happen outside the pocket with his legs as far as throwing the football down the field, or he can run the football as well because he's a little more healthy now and mobile. What you want to try and do against Russell is keep him in the pocket. And if you're the Falcons defensive front, you want to make sure you're not rushing too far up the field and not allow him to escape, because that's when he becomes the most dangerous, even though he's a good pocket passer as well. So that would be my way of trying to stop Russell Wilson, either making sure you have a controlled pass rush and then sometimes have a spy back there just in case he does want to scramble, you have somebody to take care of him.
Hey, and I have one more question, just, and this is all kind of off the football subject because it's not often that we get to talk to a Hall of Famer. I mean, just that experience of wearing the gold jacket, how often do you find yourself just looking at that and just realizing that your legacy is unlike most players that have ever been in the league?
You know, I very rarely wear the jacket unless it's like a Hall of Fame event that I have to wear it to. Like, I'll wear it a bunch at Super Bowl because we have some events going on there, or if there's different appearances throughout the year. But it's one of those jackets that you don't want to wear out in public because it'll create a whole lot of attention because it is really bright, you know, gold.
Right.
But it's one of those jackets that if you have one in your closet hanging there, you know you've done something pretty special to have one of those. And that's
all
what...
Right.
Is always a constant reminder when I do go in my closet to look for something to wear or a suit or whatever. You see that jacket hanging there, and it's just a constant reminder, hey, I'm one of the best players to ever play this great game of football, and it's something that's a reminder all the time when I walk into my closet.
Absolutely.
Hey, well, I got a quick question for you about Pete Carroll's system. It seems like a lot of his assistants, Ken Norton Jr., now the defensive coordinator with the Raiders, Gus Bradley, former head coach of the Jaguars, and now you have Dan Quinn, the head coach of the Falcons. And what is it about Pete Carroll's system that makes these guys become, you know, grow into being head coaches, and then, you know, Ken Norton now being the defensive coordinator, and Chris Richard applying or interviewing to be the job in Buffalo? What is it about the system that makes these guys stand out, and what other teams covet these guys to become head coaches?
You know, it's a pretty simple system. If you talk to people about our defense, we don't do a lot of exotic things. You know, we play a lot of cover three zone. We play some man, and then we're starting to pressure a little bit more with some blitz and some man. But what we do is we do it very, very well. It's very, very disciplined, and he makes the guys play in a disciplined style, but he also finds the right players for that defense. He's not a guy that's going to go out and try and draft the highest, you know, the highest rated guy on the board. He wants to draft a guy that he thinks fits this system, fits this particular position, and that's what he goes out and looks for. And he also looks for guys with chips on their shoulder. He wants guys that play with a little bit of a swagger, you know, guys that feel like they were not drafted as high as they should have been, like a Richard Sherman or like a Cam Chancellor. Those guys are fifth-round draft choices, believe it or not. But they play with that chip that, hey, you guys passed me over five times. I'm going to show you made a mistake doing that. And that's the way they play every week. And we have a lot of guys on our defense like that. If you look at our football team right now, we have one first-rounder on our roster, one. Our other first-rounder is Earl Thomas, and he's, you know, out for the year on injured reserve. So most of our guys are lower-round draft picks or free agents on our roster that have that swagger I was talking about, that have that chip on their shoulder, but they also fit exactly into that defense.
Wow. One last question for you, Mr. Moon, just Coach Hill again. When you look at all of these teams and you look at these quarterbacks, right now, who do you feel has that look in their eye right now? Who has that look? Being that you've been a champion and being a, you know, a championship quarterback and a Hall of Famer, who has that look right now in your opinion?
Well, I see one guy with that look almost every day, and that's Russell Wilson. This guy, he wants to be great. He looks for these type of moments. He lives for these type of moments in the playoffs to make big plays. I think Aaron Rodgers has that look right now. If you look at the way he's played down the stretch, they've won seven games in a row. He's been very dominant. I think 22 touchdown passes, no interceptions during that time, which is pretty much unheard of. So he protects the ball. He makes a lot of big plays. And he said way back when they were 4-6, we need to run the table in order to do this, and they went ahead and did it. So he's got that look. There's no question about it. But this time of the year, you know, all these guys – Tom Brady, I'm sure, has it, even though he's been on a break for a while. He's been on a bye. But he's one of the more competitive players to ever play this game. And I think that that's what's driving him this year, is he has that look in his eyes because of what happened early in the season with the suspension and all that. I think he'd really love to shove it to the NFL and come out there and win another championship. So there's several quarterbacks when you get to this stage of the season that have that look you're looking for.
Absolutely. And, Warren, it's been absolutely fantastic getting you on. I know you're very busy. You're preparing for the game this weekend. Real quick, obviously we know which side you're going to pick. Do you kind of have a score or a way this game could work itself out?
Yeah, the last score, I think, was 26-22. I think this one's going to be somewhere in that same area, probably 27-24, you know, Seahawks. Both teams are going to score because they're both good on offense, but hopefully our defense is just a little bit better than theirs that day. It's going to be the difference.
Absolutely. Once again, I appreciate your time. And for Cody, Reggie, and the coach, we appreciate you coming on and look forward to working with you down the road.
All right. I look forward to that as well. And thanks for having me on, and enjoy the games this weekend. They should be great. This is one of the best weekends in pro football, is the divisional round, when you got, you know, four great games.
Absolutely. Have a good one.
Okay. Take care, guys.
And that was Hall of Famer and radio broadcaster for the Seahawks. And, of course, like I said, the five-time Grey Cup winner in the CFL, Warren Moon. Guys, I don't know about you guys, but I'm glad I tied the weights on the side of my pants so I wouldn't float away in that one.
Absolutely. Like I mentioned, there's very few chances you get to talk to a Hall of Famer, right?
So, right.
Great interview. Great interview.
Absolutely.
Bit of a homer, but you expect that.
Yeah, I was okay with that because we let you talk about the Falcons in good light all the time, so I figured it was only fair.
Hey, it's definitely fair. I mean, seriously, I didn't expect him to pick anybody else.
Right, that's why I said obviously we know which side, you know, is there a score or something like that. But, yeah, definitely shout out to one of our new off-air producer, Billy, for booking that one. I know he's listening to us off-air, but Billy, appreciate that one. You know, we'll roll right into, obviously, talking about the Detroit and Seattle game over the weekend where, I don't know, for some reason I decided to get cute and be the only person picking the Lions, and it kind of blew up in my face, as my picks typically do. The way Seattle's playing, like he said, I thought the offensive line was the liability. They didn't look like it against a defense from Detroit that scares a lot of other people. What did you guys see?
Well, for me, I mean, Detroit didn't have the number one defense. I mean, it wasn't like they were playing a top-tier, you know, defense. So, I mean, you kind of got to take that for what it's worth. Not that Atlanta is going to be, you know, wasn't much better, at least on paper. But, yeah, I think that they did what they were supposed to do and did what they were expected to do. I mean, I've been in that stadium, and it's almost impossible to win in that stadium because you can't hear yourself think. So I think the Seahawks did just what you expected them to do.
I think the Lions did exactly what I expected them to do. They were going to go out and lay an egg. Stafford hasn't won a playoff game in his career. He's now 0-3. Jim Caldwell is a great coach, but the Lions, when was the last time the Lions won a big playoff game or a big game overall? They could not win any games down the stretch where they could have won the division, and I expect them to go in there and lay an egg against Seattle like they did. The Clink is a very tough place to play. And you know, only scoring 6 points on offense when you had Stafford was a guy that could have won the MVP. He had a great year, but the guy hasn't won a playoff game, and, you know, Seattle's just too tough. So, I mean, it came out the way I expected. I thought the Lions would show a little more effort, but, you know, when you're 0-3 in the playoffs as a starting quarterback and, you know, you're a team that's always, you know, there's always stuff going on with the Lions, you know, are they going to fire Caldwell? What, you know, what's Martha Ford going to do with that? It you know, creates problems, and it just, you know, unfortunately, that I want to see the Lions win, but, you know, you're not going to win in Seattle, especially on Wild Card weekend. It's not going to happen.
Right.
Well, absolutely. Well, Coach, did you see something different?
Well, for me, as I look at just the personnel, I kind of look at Detroit like I look at Cleveland. I mean, I don't know if they have a lot of movable parts, but they have a lot of players on the roster, but they don't have a lot of playmakers on the roster. So I think that tends to hurt them, and I think they backdoored themselves, you know, with some wins here and some scenarios there that got them in. But they basically looked like a team that, you know, that was not going to win against a team like Seattle. It was no way they were going to match up with them.
Now, I got a follow-up to that, Coach. From a coaching perspective, does that hurt Terrell Austin in the coaching search? I mean, obviously, when he lost Nick Fairley and Sue, Dominican Sue, in the offseason to free agency, you know, everyone was always, you know, that was kind of the talk was that, you know, these guys wouldn't be as good as they were when they were there. How does this hurt him in the coaching search?
Well, again, when you're looking at teams and you're looking at personnel, you're looking at the history of those organizations, it can take its toll. Plus, it depends on what they're going to do and how much positioning that the new coach will have in helping in the draft. You know, what are you actually looking for in the draft this time? Are you going to be able to sustain that once you draft it? As you can see, two of their key players are gone now from that defense. So now what do you do with all of that? You know, how much wiggle room do you have when it comes down to your salary cap, things of that nature? So, I mean, yeah, it plays a huge role in your search when you're looking at, you know, hey, this is what it's going to be and how long can you really work with it? You know, I mean, I think Detroit has some things there, organization and structural-wise, they need to work on, as well as Cleveland. You know, at some point, you have to make a decision on, you know, how you are you going to gut this roster and build it from scratch again. If you notice what Mr. Moon was saying earlier in the interview, he stated that if you look at Seattle, they've built themselves around not having a lot of ones and twos on their team. They only have two number ones on the whole roster. So, you know,
so this
you gotta
is a possible GM issue.
Right, so now you have to go in. You know, you have to go in, and you have to now go find the capable people in your organization, and trust those individuals to go in and what we call turn over the rocks and find those players that can fit the system that you're looking to build in the organization, and be willing to be patient enough to allow it to grow. That's the key to that. You have to be willing to allow it. If you notice, you know, Mr. Moon again stated that Seattle has a lot of experience, but look at how that experience has come along over the last couple of years. You know, prior to that, Seattle wasn't a team that people were threatened by. Over the last 5 years, they've become that type of team. So are you willing to, you know, be patient and divest that type of investment and energy into finding those players that can now gel together and become that team that you want them to be?
Right.
You know, he told us who the second first-rounder they had on the team was, and I forgot it now. Did he say who the first one was?
Earl Thomas.
No, he didn't. It was Earl Thomas and
I don't think he said who the first one was. And I was trying to go down the list.
I would have guessed Jimmy Graham, but I was wrong. He's a third rounder, actually. So I really don't know if I could name who the other first rounder is unless he's a lineman.
It wasn't Marshawn Lynch because they got him in the trade and he's no longer there with them anyway. So
right.
Yeah.
Our stat guy apparently is working on it. So since we have a new stat guy, I'm hoping to have it here in a minute. But, yeah, ultimately, you know, this sets up the game we were just talking about with Warren, where the Seattle Seahawks are going to come here to the Atlanta Falcons home, or they're home for now, I guess. Okay, stat guy says Bruce Irvin is the other first-rounder. That makes sense.
He's on the roster.
How did we forget that guy?
He's with the Raiders.
Oh, yeah,
that's right.
He's with the Raiders.
Yeah.
So,
it's current roster.
So the new stat guy is just slightly above the old stat guy. We're going to have to work on that. But, like I said, that sets up the matchup, Seattle at Atlanta. Seattle at Atlanta this week. We talked a little with Warren about that. You know, Cody, I'll throw it to you first. Kind of how do you see this game playing out, and do you think it's going to be a lot like the one earlier in the season?
You know, I like the way that Atlanta's playing. The way their offense is gelled all year long, with Matt Ryan and you know Julio Jones, and you know I'm gonna throw this out there real quick to you guys. What do you guys think of what Julio Jones said about the holding? He's gonna tell the officials if the Seahawks are holding. Do you think that's a smart thing for him to come out and say that? You know, a couple of days before the game.
Probably not. Well, it's more material for the Seahawks, but at the same time. Maybe he can get them off their game because Richard Sherman will be too busy running his mouth and running a route.
Right. And that's honestly how I saw it, Cody, was, you know, that's words play with Richard Sherman. I mean, Richard Sherman came out a little earlier and said, oh, we know what these guys like to do. We know what we need to do. We think that we made a few mistakes, which caused them to score a few points. And, I mean, these guys are prideful too, right? I mean, Julio knows that at any given moment he can go and drop 300, receiving yards on somebody. And these guys are no different. Richard Sherman, I don't think, is a shutdown corner type of guy that can stop Julio when he doesn't want to be stopped. But I think it was more words play than anything. And if you hear the climate here in Atlanta and they're talking about the teams, as I've been kind of monitoring a lot of this, these guys are super amped to go out and prove a point. They're trying to keep it within the walls, and you can tell with some of the commentary, but you know, every now and then it leaks out quite regularly that these guys are really looking to go out and make this a decisive win because they're sick and tired of the disrespect.
No, that's a great point, because usually it's Sherman. It's usually Sherman and the Seahawks, defense, the leads in a boom that are, they're always, running their mouths about things. And it's actually nice to see a receiver like Julio Jones come out and say something like that. To try to, try to get it going, I think it's more to fire up the Falcons more than anything. Like, I know it's weird to say that, but having him come out and say, like, he's watching that, I like that. So,
absolutely.
But coming to
it is. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that speaks a little bit to what Mr. Moon was saying a little earlier when the question was asked about the pedigree of coaches that comes out of Seattle and what is it about, Pete Carroll's system. And he mentioned that swagger. Right, and this is what I think is the difference with Atlanta now under Coach Quinn, is Mike Smith was very conservative, even in the way he wanted the team to approach the game and keep their emotions in check and basically put them in a box and bury them, right? Whereas Quinn just kind of lets them do what they do, and that's that swagger. So to your point, I was glad to hear the back and forth. I didn't want this to be a conservative game. I want them to come out acting like they are supposed to win. We're the 2 seed. We're supposed to win this game, and I think that's the difference, and I think that's what is going to ultimately take Atlanta over the top in this game.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think this is the Falcons' time. They've been to the NFC Championship game since 2012 when they lost to the Niners. I think this is their year. The way the offense is going, Matt Ryan's probably going to win the MVP. If he doesn't, it's a travesty. I think the Falcons get revenge. I think Dan Quinn gets the win over his. The guy he learned from, and I think the Falcons move on to go to the NFC Championship game next weekend.
I would go as far as to say, guys, and as we always know, defense wins championships, and I think that Coach Quinn, being a defensive coordinator, has a few things that he's ready to unleash that he's been holding on to all year, and I think you're going to start seeing it unfold in Seattle. I think it's going to be one of the most physical games that you see in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think we could definitely see that. Obviously, Reggie, we know that you're not going for Seattle in this one. Cody, who's your pick?
I'm going with Atlanta. I think Atlanta's going.
Okay.
I think Atlanta's going back to the NFC Championship game for the first time since 2012.
All right, Coach, who do you have?
I have to say Atlanta, and I'm not basing it just on the offense this time. I think that their defense is going to do something different and spectacular. I think Coach Quinn's been holding them back, and I think there are some things that are going to come out in this game that's going to prove that their defense can score just as well as their offense. I got to see Atlanta in this one.
Well, I know that off-air producer Billy is going with Atlanta, so.
Oh, it's funny because it's true.
That's pretty good. We probably won't agree on any of the other three games, but right out of the gate, we're all homering out for the home team.
Well, what makes it funny for me is, coming from the Bay Area, growing up as a 49er fan, I'm not a big Seahawk guy, so of course I'm going to pick against them any chance I get.
Right.
Right.
The only person that we would actually have to ask for the explanation from would obviously be Coach, because Billy and Reggie are Falcons fans, and me as a Dallas fan, I don't want to see the Seahawks next round. I would actually want to take my chances with Atlanta. So, I mean, it would come down to if Coach was homering out or if he was just smarter than the rest of us.
Well, I got to admit, guys, when I see teams like this, I think Atlanta is in a position now where they now know that they don't care how they win, just as long as they win. And I've watched Matt Ryan do some things this year that he's never done. And if you remember, early part of the season, I said this. I said, once he gets to the point where he stops commanding but demanding that excellence out of this football team, they would rise, and they've done that.
Absolutely. Let's see. I don't think we've heard from – I think Sean will join us here in a little while. So we'll go ahead and start talking a little bit about the next matchup, and that'll lead us right into talking Cowboys with him a little later. Obviously, the Miami Dolphins forgot they were in the playoffs, and Big Ben and the other two Killer Bees reminded them by the end of the game. Big Ben got a little dinged up in that game, but Pittsburgh rolled in what was pretty much part two of the train wreck of last weekend. You know, given the way that game played out, how do you think Pittsburgh is going to combat Kansas City? We'll start with you, Coach.
Well, again, this is one of those type of matchups where it's going to be very physical. I think that Ben has been there enough times, and I think they're going to methodically move down the field. I don't think it's going to be a lot of stuff over the top real fast. I think they're going to control the clock, which allows Kansas City offense not to hit the field. And so I think it's going to be one of those things where they play conservative, but they will take their shots when those shots are available. So, again, I'm leaning toward Pittsburgh to probably win this game. Their defense will do enough, but I think their offense and the way they control the time of possession is what's going to push them over the top.
Okay. Reggie, what are you thinking about this game?
Well, I really think along the lines of the way Coach Hill thinks and how Pittsburgh is going to approach this game. I think, I mean, based on just where it's at being, it's in Kansas City, and just the fact that I think that their defense, Kansas City's defense, is a tad bit better than what, a little bit better than what Pittsburgh is bringing to the table. I think Pittsburgh is going to try to run it. They're going to try to use Le'Veon Bell again, and it just really is going to depend on how well that offensive line can keep can get him those yards. I don't think Ben wants to throw on these guys. I think that would be a mistake. I'm going to pick Pittsburgh simply because I think Alex Smith makes the mistake. Whatever mistake it's going to take that causes him to lose that game, I think he's the guy that's going to be the determining factor. Ben just doesn't make those mistakes. He stays within, like Coach mentioned, he's going to stay within the offense. He's going to stay conservative. Pittsburgh doesn't mind winning a 14-13 game, and they excel in those types of games. So I think it's going to be close, but I think Pittsburgh's going to take it.
All right, and of course that moves us to you, Cody.
You know, this game's a little more interesting for me because you got Andy Reid, who's 19-2 after a bye week, and you know he had a week to prepare for the Steelers. So, you know, the way the Steelers has dominated the Dolphins, which I don't think anyone really expected them to not dominate the Dolphins. You know, you got Ben, who's banged up a little bit, but the guy's always banged up. He plays through injuries every week of every year of his career. Le'Veon Bell played his first playoff game last week, and he showed why he's probably, if he's not considered, he should be considered the best running back in the league. And you have Antonio Brown, who no one can cover. So, going into this, with Andy Reid having the extra time to prepare with that, the Chiefs' defense is very... I wouldn't say they're underrated because they had a really good year, and you got a lot of good playmakers back there like Eric Berry and such. And I think the one X factor that could hurt the Steelers' defense that wasn't very good all year was Tyreek Hill. They're not even just with special teams. I think him, you know, catching passes in backfield, him, you know, doing a couple of reverses and then throwing screens to him could be a factor for the Steelers, whose secondary is not very talented. And their linebackers, you know, they have Ryan Shazier and, you know, Lawrence Timmons, but it's just I think going into this, I actually picked the Steelers to win the Super Bowl at the beginning of the season. I'm going to stick with it. I think the Steelers going to this game, they win. They beat Kansas City once this year already. I think they can do it again and get back to the AFC title game.
Yeah, if I go with my preseason pick, then I would have to change my pick on the last game because I said that Seattle was going to lose to New England. So I'm going to disagree with myself on that. But so you're going Andy Reid on that one, correct?
No, I'm taking the Steelers.
Oh.
I think Andy Reid.
Okay.
He's the 19-2 after the bye weeks is very impressive, but I think the Steelers are just they're rolling right now. They're the one team you did not want to see get hot going into the playoffs, and they won. I think now 7 in a row going into the playoffs, including the playoff win. So yeah, I think the Steelers are gonna get this win and go to the AFC title game next weekend.
All right. Well, Reggie, I got to join you on this one. Then I'm going Team Andy Reid. Even though the stat guy did give me this cool stat just a minute ago, said that the Steelers have sacked the opposing quarterback 32 times since week 9. Last time I checked, Alex Smith was a game manager, not a full-on quarterback. So I think you got to go Kansas City on this one. Andy Reid does do phenomenal when he gets a week off. So, you know, obviously to recap that one.
Hold on. Old Montreal Montfer. I went Pittsburgh in a close one.
Oh, you want Pittsburgh in a close one?
Yes,
okay,
sir.
I'll be the Lone
Ranger again.
Man, this worked out so well last week with Detroit. But I have a feeling we're going to homer out on our next pick because we have on our amazing Impact Media hotline from 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. He is the voice of the Dallas Metroplex. He is Sean Sharif. How you doing, Sean?
The voice of the Metroplex. I like the ring of that. It's. I wish it was more accurate, but I like the ring of it. You can just refer to me as that. I'll take it.
Absolutely. You know, I voted for you in the poll. I figured I had to give you some love there because you are the point man over there. And just for some reason, nobody else remembered you were in the survey there.
Well, our listeners are a bunch of smart asses, and they probably figured that it would drive me crazy being dead last. So they voted a bunch of our producer guys at the very top. So I'll have to deal with it. But I appreciate you and my mom voting for me. I got two votes.
Hey, there you go. And of course, you're on with Coach Haywood Hill, the King ATL, and Reggie Walker. I myself, Jeremy York, and Cody Elias from 95.7. Out in the Bay Area. You may have you guys did the crossover episode with them, right?
Yeah, I think we went back. That's the game, right? I think we went back and forth
yeah.
to the game when we were making fun
yes.
of the 49ers.
Yes, you did, and it was a good time as a 49er fan. I truly enjoyed it because I buy into the hype of how bad that team is being run right now. So it was a good time. My guys really enjoyed that conversation with you guys.
Same here.
But obviously we bring you on because not only do you work in Dallas, but you guys have got to see up close the way Dak and this offense has ran and the way this, as everybody around the nation calls them, the misfit toys or whatever on defense, the Cowboys have actually been pretty good this year.
Yeah, Rod Marinelli, their defensive coordinator, refers to them as the orphans, the group of people that nobody wanted. David Irving, Cedric Thornton, Terrell McClain, Tank Lawrence, a bunch of no-name linebackers except for Sean Lee since they lost. They didn't have Jalen Smith this year. Anthony Hitchens is back there. So a bunch of no-name guys on this defense that has really surprised everyone, especially me, with how they've played this season, not giving up 100-yard rushers and not giving up big-time point totals. In games where the Cowboys could be involved in shootouts. Of course, a lot of that credit goes to the offensive line, time of possession in the running game, but Rob Marinelli has obviously done a phenomenal job to no-name guys.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jeremy. That was on me. So,
man, I just dropped a knowledge bomb. The silence of the room, a knowledge bomb.
That was all those minds blowing right there, Sean. That's what that was.
Yeah, right.
So going back a little bit, because obviously there was a lot of controversy and talk about the whole Tony Romo versus Dak Prescott and who should be playing and who shouldn't. What I want to ask you is, I mean, it's obvious that you can't keep a $20 million backup quarterback. What do you think Dallas' plans are for Tony after the season is over?
Well, I think Jerry Jones, being the ultimate negotiator he is, his pipe dream is to get Tony to renegotiate and stay here as a backup. That's what I think Jerry wants to do, and he's so good, he probably has a little belief that he can do it. In reality, they're going to have to trade him. And, you know, I was looking at maximum a third-round pick before the Philadelphia game where he only played one series. But you know how sports fans, we aren't the only ones that are emotional. General managers, owners, coaches, obviously everyone makes stupid decisions all the time. So I feel like maybe we could even be talking about a first-round pick after Tony looked as good as he did against Philadelphia. Maybe a first, maybe a second, maybe make it conditional based upon snaps played because of his injury history. You do it in terms of if his team gets a certain amount of wins or if they make the playoffs. But the teams that have been thrown out there, obviously the Denver Broncos, the Houston Texans, you know, for me a wild card, the Arizona Cardinals, for me a wild card team could be someone like the New York Jets. But, you know, in all likelihood, Tony Romo has played his last snap as a Dallas Cowboy against the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, there are some people that want Tony to come into – this is insane. This is usually Skip Bayless, Stephen A. Smith garbage that's thrown out just to get web clicks. But there are some people – that want Tony Romo to come into this game on Sunday if the Cowboys are even down 10 points. I think that's ludicrous. That's insane. That's an emotional yo-yo. There's a column written about it that kind of went national and viral. But you got some Romo fans that are still married to number nine, and they haven't ruled him out even for this game against Green Bay.
Right. Sounds a lot like when we were going through the whole Mike Vick, Matt Ryan debacle shortly after that. It was, trust me, there's still fans now, as witnessed by the game when Mike Vick came back as part of the last, you know, regular season game at the Dome. I mean, it was electric. It was, everybody was doing standing ovations, and it was screaming and yelling, and there are still some fans that wish he could come back. And I'm like, ah, let's move on.
I did a segment after Christmas that if your family got you a number nine jersey, they don't love you as a Christmas gift. Because they're giving these, that's like getting a Manziel jersey, you know, like not as bad, but they're discounting these things. They're giving away off the rack, and people are still getting number nine jerseys. And I'm like, let it go. He's been buried. He's 6 feet under. Don't get the shovel out and try to dig him back up. But you still have some people that want to win their way. They just want the Cowboys to win. They got to have the Cowboys win with their guy at quarterback.
Right.
Well, Sean, you know, Cody, one of the things, you know, heading into this game, Aaron Rodgers has been the hottest quarterback in the league. You know, I'm going to ask this is a very easy question. You know, how did the Cowboys try to slow down Aaron Rodgers in that passing attack? I know Jordy Nelson looking like he probably won't play, but, I mean, what's the key to try to slow down Rodgers and try to make the Packers' non-existent running game beat you this weekend?
Well, they're going to have to get a pass rush from one of the orphans, you know, like David Irving, a complete no-name, picked up off Kansas City. He had his breakout performance against Green Bay at Lambeau Field. You remember that earlier this year where he had like three forced fumbles. He was NFC Defensive Player of the Week off of just 19 snaps. It was insane. So they're counting on David Irving to wreak some havoc for a possible breakout moment for him. They're counting on Tank Lawrence, who's been dealing with some injury issues. Tank, you know, had a career season last year playing opposite of Greg Hardy. And then they're going to rely on Sean Lee having an all-pro game like he's had an all-pro season. And then their secondary is finally healthy. Morris Claiborne is coming back in this game. He got knocked out by Sean Lee in that Green Bay game. Brandon Carr has been pretty solid this season. Orlando Scandrick in the slot. They got a kid, I believe, in the sixth round named Anthony Brown that has had a fantastic year. And then J.J. Wilcox has been hitting hard, and Barry Church has had a nice season. So I don't think they're going to blitz Aaron Rodgers a lot. Rod Marinelli doesn't like the blitz. Aaron Rodgers is number one in the league against the blitz. So they're going to have to rely on some of these orphans to create some pressure up front, because that's what really killed the Cowboys in the 2004. Everyone remembers the 14 game at Lambeau in the playoffs for the Dez catch, non-catch. Well, it was also about not getting to Aaron Rodgers. He had all day to throw like he did in that second half against the Giants.
One of the things I want to see, and Aaron has, he's just a guy that can make, wave a magical wand with the football. I agree. Dallas is going to have to do something. But with this game, I'm wondering if Dallas has enough in his secondary to cover up some of the things that they can do offensively. Now they seem to be very comfortable with being able to not have the run game where they want to have it, but yet being able to complete these passes. What do you think about that with the matchup?
Well, you can't rely obviously, Jordy Nelson not being there is going to be huge. And they still have Randall Cobb, who had three touchdowns against the Giants, and they still have Devontae Adams. But, you know, you're not going to be able to rely on four turnovers that Green Bay gave you in the first matchup. But, you know, this, again, it's hard for me right now, even though I've been proven wrong all season long, it is hard for me to believe that even though it's going to be perfect conditions inside AT&T Stadium, that the secondary is just going to get absolutely torched when they don't have Jordy Nelson. I mean, Green Bay is so one-dimensional. I basically view this as an all-around Cowboys team with an elite offense, the best offensive line of football, controlling the game, running it down their throat like they did in the first matchup, and then causing Green Bay to throw from behind. And no matter how good you are, when you're throwing from behind and you know that that's coming and you're the defense, we all know this, guys, watching football forever. whatever, that's going to be an advantage for your defense. So the Cowboys offense, running game, offensive line has been basically half of their defense this year. So Aaron's going to throw it. He's going to put up numbers. He's going to put up points. But hopefully for the Cowboys, the Packers are playing from behind. The worst thing, the biggest fear for Cowboy fans, and this is why some people are clamoring for Romo, is getting involved in a shootout. You don't want Dak Prescott having to match Aaron Rodgers throw for throw, touchdown for touchdown. No one except maybe Tom Brady wants that type of scenario in the entire league. So that's, I think, how the Cowboys, that's their formula for winning this game.
And, of course, we're being joined by the voice of the Dallas Metroplex from 105.3, the Fan Morning Show, Sean Sharif. And, Sean, I couldn't agree with you more about everything you just said. But I guess since they all danced around it, I'll ask about the elephant in the room. You know, based off that sketch from Zeke's accident the other day, have they been able to find that suspect?
What an awesome drawing that was. Those drawings always creep me out. I remember watching America's Most Wanted growing up, and I'd be scared to death looking outside my window because of a gray and white sketch drawing of someone who's just murdered 19 people, and that's what it looked like for Aaron Rodgers. So they haven't caught him yet, but hopefully the Cowboys defensive line will be able to catch him after that little minor accident with Zeke.
Well, you know, you are able to hold somebody for 48 hours, I believe. I don't know if Texas is like Georgia, but you can hold them 48 hours with little to no evidence. So if they want to do that about Friday night, that would be great.
I agree with you. There's a lot of different laws here in Texas. We won't get into any gun discussions because people can't handle gun discussions or politics, but I'm with you.
Texarkana. So, hey, I've got a question for you, Sean, related to one of the comments that we made on an earlier show earlier in the year, especially when Dallas was at their height. And I think, you know, is probably instrumental in what Atlanta has been able to do here offensively, is Dak Prescott seemed to rise above what was probably some noise in the locker room from Dez Bryant. Get me the ball, get me the ball, get me the ball. How much of that, you know, in the last few games, it seems as if he was trying to maybe force it a little bit more to Dez and get him a little bit more involved. But how much of that have you been hearing about, you know, locally as to, you know, how Dak has been handling that?
Well, you know, to be honest, I think that this is the advantage, you know, the disadvantage, I should say. I'll give some of the national guys a break because, you know, they got to talk about all the teams. So you aren't going to have as intimate of a knowledge of everyone as we do focusing on one team and going into the locker room in Frisco every single day. The Dez spoiled brat crying for the ball narrative, it's old, it's stale. It's extinct. It's done. Like, there's been none of that this entire year. And Dak set the tone in training camp. We were in Oxnard, California, when Dez Bryant ran a route that Dak Prescott did not like. And here you go with a kid who's taking his first snaps after Kellen Moore got hurt. And he goes up to Dez and corrects him and is like, this is not the right route I wanted you to run. And Dez, we were waiting for Dez to snap on him, you know, pile drive him into the ground. He didn't do it. To it.
Oh, wow.
And Dez Bryant is absolutely in love with Dak Prescott. And I know what period of the season you're talking about in terms of Dak struggling. He struggled against the Giants, and then he struggled against the Minnesota Vikings. And Dak had said after that, you know, he was trying to force things a little bit too much. And one of the strengths of Dak Prescott is really, I know this is cliche, taking what the defense gives him and spreading the ball around. When you see Witten getting a catch, Beasley, who was really his main guy earlier in the season, Dez, Terrence Williams, when you see all these guys getting the rock, you know that Dak Prescott is on his game. This is a special kid in terms of intangibles, and he really does not care about getting Dez Bryant the touches. And honestly, Dez Bryant, now a lot of this is winning. You know, guys aren't going to throw hissy fits. I'm going to be a lot more quiet when you're 13-3. Dez has not said anything about not getting the rock this season. So it really has been a perfect marriage from the very beginning.
All right, Sean, I'm going to follow up because you mentioned the 13-3, and this is a hypothetical question because I've been wondering this all year. If Kellen Moore does not get hurt in the preseason, is Dallas 13-3, and do we see Dak Prescott take over the team as fast as he did, or is this Kellen Moore's team when Romo went down?
Well, to answer the first question, hell no, they're not 13-3 with Kellen Moore. No one could understand how Kellen Moore even had a spot on this team, except maybe he's got naked pictures of Scott Linehan, the offensive coordinator. That's Linehan's boy. That's his little project. And the Cowboys got lucky. You know, so much of this we know is luck. The Patriots dynasty was started by what? A bad call against the Raiders in terms of the what do they call that game where Brady fumbled it?
Tuck rule.
The tuck rule game, right? You got to have a little bit of luck. The New York Giants beating the Patriots because of that BS catch by David Tyree. Well, the Cowboys are getting some luck, right? They had these are the quarterbacks they had over Dak Prescott on their board. They had Goff. They had Carson Wentz. Jerry Jones was so furious the day after the draft because he said he should have given up more to trade up for Paxton Lynch. And then they tried to trade up again for Connor Cook, who the Raiders snuck up and stole. Like, they wanted all those guys. And then Kellen Moore was going to start this season, and they probably would have replaced him after struggling for about 3, 4, 5 games. I don't know what happens from there, but absolutely not. This team is not where they are with Kellen Moore playing quarterback, in my opinion.
Sean, you know, you're selling the guy short. He was 49-3 at Boise State. He's the winningest coach or winningest quarterback in college football history. You're telling me he couldn't get this team to 13-3?
Man, don't make me go to my Google and pull up the good, really good college quarterbacks who were balling and dominating. And then Kellen Moore, you all might be able to throw the ball harder than Kellen Moore. He got the Johnny Damon and Chad Pennington of NFL arms. He looks like, seriously, he looks like – you see him on the sideline on Sunday? He looks like the water boy. He looks like the guy who's running back and forth with the first down markers. So with all due respect to your question, again, hell no.
I love it.
Got one last question for you. With the running game and the way that Dallas has been able to do some phenomenal things with the running game, if Green Bay finds a way to plug these gaps in this hole and slow this running game down, do you feel that they still can pull this off through the passing game without having the running game if it doesn't become as effective as it's been all year?
That's the question. You know, if they load up on the run, can Dak Prescott beat Aaron Rodgers? And I'm very nervous, very, very nervous for that. I still think that Dak can throw for 2, maybe even 3 touchdowns. But Dak Prescott throwing for 4 touchdowns is probably not going to happen. I have a lot of faith in this kid that he's not rattled by the moment. He's been through way too much in his life with his mom passing away. He's handled the spotlight. He's handled the Romo situation with the utmost class. I'm not going to bet. If you tell me – let's just put a number on it, all right? If you tell me that Zeke Elliott runs for 45 or 50 yards, or shoot, I'll even give you 60 yards. If Zeke runs for about 55, 60 yards in this game, I'll say that the Cowboys lose. I just don't think it's going to happen because basically no team has been able to shut down Zeke. They know the run is coming. They still can't stop it. You still got to worry about Dez over the top. You still got to worry about Jason Witten underneath. You still got to worry about Cole Beasley doing his damage. So I don't have the utmost confidence in Dak in a shootout, but I still feel pretty decent about it.
Yeah, and as we wrap up here with Sean Sharif.
And by the way, real quick, guys, sorry. Don't forget about Dak's legs either. Dak Russell Wilson, to me, is not a fantastic quarterback, but he makes these back-breaking runs. You see it on third down where no one's open, and it's 3rd and 6, and he takes off. Dak Prescott does not, you know, RG3's career is basically over because this guy, number one, couldn't read NFL defense. Number two, he couldn't figure out when to run and how to protect himself. Dak already has that gene. He's got that Russell Wilson gene. Doesn't run as much as Russell, probably not as effective, but he's got that gene of knowing when to take off. So that's another weapon that teams have to worry about. They'll throw in a little read option here and there. They'll throw in a little zone read. They'll throw in a little bootleg. They'll throw in a little QB sneak. So that's another weapon for Prescott and the Cowboys offense with his legs. Sorry to cut you off.
Oh, no problem.
Well, hey, so I was going to say, again, no faith in Kellen Moore in his 4.940 time. I'm sure he can run too.
Man, if you ask me one more Kellen Moore question, I'm going to have Jerry call you guys himself and just and say, look, even Jerry doesn't believe in Kellen Moore. If I get one more Kellen Moore question, come on now. I wouldn't let Kellen Moore throw the footballs for a punt on my team versus having a guy that could, Chris Jones, put in the air with his foot. I wouldn't let Kellen Moore throw it for a punt.
Wow.
Now you're going to get me blocked by Kellen Moore. You're going to get me blocked by Kellen Moore on Twitter. He's going to come to the studio with a shotgun on me now in Texas now because of you guys.
We all know he couldn't even throw a block on Twitter, so we're not worried about that. But
nice.
Wow.
Hey, this is just payback for making fun of the Niners all those weeks ago. You know, I had to get you back sometime.
hey, nothing personal,
yeah,
Cody, but we all still make fun of the 49ers.
Yeah, well,
man,
they deserve it.
What a dumpster fire. I'm sorry you got to follow that right now. What a dumpster fire.
But obviously, before you go, Sean, as like I said, we're joined by Sean Sharif from 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. He's the voice of the Dallas Metroplex. Obviously, as when we had Warren on, we know which side of the coin you're on. But, you know, can you give us either a score prediction or just a prediction on how this game's going to go in Dallas?
You know, it's a four-point spread. And Vegas, Bovada sent us the numbers today. Like, the overwhelming majority of the public is betting on Green Bay getting those points. And I could definitely see the Packers winning, but I think this is going to be a 30-27, a 28-26 type game. I see it, you know, being decided by 1, 2, or even 3 points. If the Cowboys start very, very fast and Aaron Rodgers is pressured into forcing some throws, I could see the Cowboys maybe with a 10-point win, but he's so red hot. He's playing in perfect conditions. I really think, and after I saw what they did without Jordy Nelson against the Giants, I still think that Aaron Rodgers does a lot of damage, but I picked the Cowboys in this one about 31-27, 31-28. That's my prediction.
Definitely so. And then obviously, since we are Falcon Zone, what do you see in the Seattle-Atlanta game?
Whew. This is my toughest game of the weekend. I heard you guys talking about this before. The question to me is, can you trust Atlanta? Well, there's two trust factors. Number one, can you trust Seattle on the road? We all know they're a completely different team on the road. And two, you know, Matt Ryan's my MVP, but we know that he's got, you know, kind of a Romo-esque cloud hanging over his head in the postseason, in the playoffs. I've gone back and forth. Michael Lombardi almost talked me into changing my pick because he's going to pick Seattle. But I'm going to go with Atlanta here. I just don't think that Seattle can score enough with the Falcons in Atlanta. But I even think it's more important for the Falcons to start faster than the Cowboys, because you let Seattle make some plays up front and with that defense, and they get a pick on Matt Ryan early or something like that to control some field position. You don't trust that Falcons defense against Russell Wilson and Doug Baldwin and Jimmy Graham. But I'm going to go with the Falcons. I don't feel good about it. I'm going to go with Atlanta to score more points than Seattle because I don't trust Seattle's offense.
It's funny because it's true.
Anytime we actually all agree for some reason on the show, we call that the Homer pick. So that may be the only one we all agree on this week, including our stat guy.
Well, that means that Seattle's definitely winning then.
Yeah, right? You always go against the majority. But, Sean, it's been fantastic having you on. I know you're busy. You got to probably get some sleep here soon because the Sean and RJ show, New School with Sean and RJ. Are you guys still calling it that, by the way?
No, but that's another story.
Okay.
That's all right. That's all right.
But Sean and RJ show is on from 6:30 to 11 here in the Atlanta area. That is 5:30 to 10 out in Central Standard Time. Definitely check them out. If not, there's the podcast for them. There's some other guys on the show besides Sean and RJ, and they may not have as much fun as we do, but they come dang close. Sean, it's been fantastic having you on, and would love to have you on again sometime in the near future, and have a great rest of your evening.
Thanks for having me, guys. Hopefully we can do a Super Bowl preview on the way to Houston. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
And that was Sean Sharif, the voice of the Dallas Metroplex from 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. Cody, I know you enjoyed that because you didn't get to really go back and forth on the crossover. So making dreams come true here at Impact Media.
I want to know where I can go get my Kellen Moore reduced jersey next to Tony Romo. I mean, that's all I'm looking for now.
Right, because, I mean, that totally just slipped my mind. He said if we ask one more Kellen Moore question, he was going to have Jerry Jones call us. And I went, I just need to ask another question because Jerry is free to call this show whenever he wants.
I mean, if you want Jerry to call the show, I want to ask him about Kellen Moore. Why is he not given the proper chance? All those articles were written all those years ago. He's the next Tom Brady, and, well, here he is. You know, he got Wally Pitt by Dak Prescott.
absolutely. But, you know, let's talk about this this Green Bay game. And the more I thought about it, I realized that I think we're going to have at least one Green Bay vote on the panel. So I do think that the Atlanta game is the only we're going to agree on across the board. You know, let's start with who I think is going to be that Green Bay person. Coach, how do you see this game playing out?
Well, I can tell you this, that Green Bay is always a tough team in the playoffs. The organization always finds a way to win. It's a demand thing on their part. I think that Aaron Rodgers will control this game. I think that there's going to be some things in the running game that's going to be very shocking. I don't think Dallas is going to be able to adjust fast enough to it. I think Rainey's going to be able to pull some things off. And I feel that, again, it's going to be close, but I think Green Bay will prevail.
See, there's the Green Bay vote. And I, even as the Dallas fan, I'm going back and forth on this. But before I weigh in, Cody, go ahead and tell us how you see it.
You know, this game is actually really interesting to me. I like Dallas. I like what they've done. You know, I think Jason Garrett's done a nice job with the team. You know, everything going on with Dak and Romo this year, and the, you know, the play of Zeke and the way he's, you know, he's maturated into being probably the best back in the league. Him or Le'Veon Bell, you can argue for that. You know, I want to say Dallas is going to win, but the Packers are like the Steelers. You know, they're the hottest team besides the Steelers going into the playoffs. Aaron Rodgers has already won a Super Bowl. It's hard to pick against the Pack. I'm going with the Pack in this game. I think Green Bay is just on a roll right now. And after what they did to the Giants, who, you know, the Giants kind of, you know, owned them the last couple times they played in the playoffs. I know Green Bay's going to Dallas. You know, they're a 4-point underdog, but I think Green Bay's going to get this done and go on to face the Falcons next week for the NFC title game.
Wow, then I know I'm not lone wolfing it because Billy took Dallas. I'm taking Dallas not because Dallas is my team. I feel like at some point the buzzsaw that is Aaron Rodgers has got to slow down a little bit. Plus, I don't know that he has Jordy Nelson. And besides Jordy Nelson, everybody else he has to throw open because Jordy Nelson's the only receiver he has that gets separation. So I got Dallas winning this. I kind of agree with Sean as far as – it's probably, you know, 30-27. It's going to be really tight, really back and forth. It's going to be a lot like that college game from Monday night. So that leaves it up to you, King Atlian. Who you got?
I think it's going to come down to experience. I mean, the playoffs are a completely different animal, much like what Cody said. Green Bay is playing out of their minds right now. I'm actually glad that Green Bay is going to be playing Dallas, because maybe Dallas will beat them up a little bit before they come here to Atlanta. I've got Green Bay. I've got to go with Green Bay.
Man, you guys are trying to leave me out on an island, right? I'm not even trying to be cute with this pick either. That's usually how I get stuck on an island. But I guess to recap, like I said, between myself, Sean, and off-air producer Billy, who shout out once again for having Mr. Moon join us earlier, we're all on Team Dallas. You guys are on the Pack. So we're actually split down the middle. I guess I'll have to come up with a new soundbite for what split down the middle is.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can find something for that.
Right.
Oh, you know what? Why not? I could do the opening line to one of my favorite songs of all time from one of my
Uh-oh.
Favorite movies of all time. I could do Stuck in the Middle.
So bad.
You could.
Yeah, I know it's not Bay Area good there, Cody, but it's good for the East Coast. We still like Reservoir Dogs.
Hey, you know what? I mean, the Bay Area probably don't even understand that reference, so I'm glad I did.
Yeah, see, I knew you would. That's why I threw it out there. But of course, that moves us into the last game we're going to talk about tonight, and obviously. The precursor to that is to talk about how Connor Cook did against the Houston defense, or more importantly, how Jadeveon Clowney has kind of emerged as the new J.J. Watt while he's out. What did you guys see from this game? Coach, I'll start with you.
Well, by far, their defense is what's going to have to sustain them. I mean, that's what I saw. I mean, at this point, it's just going to be one of those toss-ups. For me, the jury is still out, but just because of what you have. It's just one of those fickle type of situations for me. It's a fickle game.
All right, Reggie, what did you see in the Raiders' Connor Cook debut against Houston?
I mean, I saw what I expected. I mean, listen, Connor Cook, it was his first official NFL start. I think if Derek Carr's in that game, it probably would have gone a lot different. I don't know if the second kid, who was I can't remember who the second guy was, the second string
guy.
McGoin. But Derek Carr would have been the only person that could possibly have pulled that game out. I think they would have beaten him if he's under center. And just to kind of give you my pick a little quick, nobody beats Brady in New England. I don't see it. They don't have it. They're saying they're the number one defense on paper maybe, but Tom Brady in the playoffs in Foxborough, I don't think it's going to happen.
All right. Cody, what did you think of Connor Cook's debut and kind of the state of the Raiders? Because they started with so much promise this year, and you hated to see, you know, Christmas Eve for that to go down the way it did. But the state of the Raiders going forward, I mean, how does it look?
Well, you know what? It's, you know, that game, you know, it's kind of what you expected. Connor Cook in his first start, as Reggie and everyone said, you know, Cook wasn't good. You know, he had the one touchdown, the three picks. He was 18 of 45. He was facing the Houston defense. That is, you know, number one defense in the league with Jadeveon Clowney. You know, you got AJ Bouye back there and covering Amari. You got Kareem Jackson and Jonathan Joseph covering Crabtree and Seth. So it took away a lot of his, you know, his first and second options, and he had to rely on guys like Michael Rivera to get the ball to. So it was what I expected. You know, now what happened after was kind of surprising because everyone thought that Ken Norton Jr. was going to be the one that got, you know, that they replaced. But it was actually Musgrave who they replaced, who's now, you know, rumors that he could be interviewing for the Cal job. But, you know, the Raiders replaced Musgrave with QB coach Todd Downing. So the state of the Raiders is, you know, people are really optimistic going into next season because you know you're going to get Derek back. You're going to have another year with Amari, with Derek. Michael Crabtree's going to be back. Everyone's going to be back. The only thing that the people are worried about is they could be losing Latavius Murray, so the Raiders are going to be looking for a running back. But, you know, they show up some things on their in their secondary. And, you know, they shore up a couple other things with their, you know, backup offensive lineman. Maybe go get a backup quarterback if you don't have faith in Cook. The Raiders will be fine for next year. It's just, you know, losing Derek Carr was a huge loss to them because, you know, this team went from being a team that was everyone's, you know, darling for the Super Bowl to a guy, a team that they didn't think they can, you know, even win the game against Houston.
Yeah, you mentioned, real quick, you mentioned losing Latavius Murray. I think that's actually probably going to be a good thing for them. I mean, honestly, I've never really thought he was top tier one or tier two running back. I was speaking to some of my friends who are Raiders fans, and I've got ones that are Raiders and 49ers, and they go back and forth, and it's actually very cool to watch. But that being said, I would like to see them take a chance on Mixon. I think that's a guy they can draft undrafted free agent. That's a guy that can come in and change the complexity for them, or change their lack of a run game. I think you find somebody that's a veteran maybe to come show him how to, you know, do what he does. But I think Mixon would be a good look there.
A running back that people keep throwing out there a lot. People did this throughout the season. And I kind of agree with it. No, this is just me. I would love to see Christian McCaffrey with the Raiders because he's such a dude. He can do so much. But
oh,
I think
wow.
A guy the Raiders are probably going to look at, and a lot of people have said this, a lot of people like Dalvin Cook from Florida State. He kind of fits the Raiders system. It depends on what, you know, what Downing wants to do with the offense, but you already have you had a good year from DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard, who are both rookies. You know, Richard's an undrafted guy, and DeAndre Washington, a fifth-round draft pick out of Texas Tech. You've got a lot out of those two guys. And then if you can get someone like Dalvin Cook, or, you know, getting McCaffrey is great, but he has New England Patriots written all over him. So that's probably where he'll end up. So
I don't think Cook's around. Cook's gone by the time they pick.
I know.
Unless they're going to trade up.
It's a stretch. You know, Reggie's been building a good team here. Reggie McKenzie's been building a good team. With that roster, you know, they're kind of doing that whole Green Bay mentality where they're going to build through the draft and not really sign any big-name free agents, although they kind of did that last year with Sean Smith. But I could see they need to get it back, and I kind of agree with what you said, Reg, with Latavius Murray. It might be a good thing that they're going to let him go because that means there's more touches for Jalen Richard and DeAndre Washington. And a lot of people here do like Latavius Murray. You know, he's a good dude. He's a good interview on the radio. He's overall a great guy. But some people, his running style just doesn't doesn't sit with people. Like, I know for sure, like, Lorenzo O'Neal does not like the way he runs. He thinks he runs too high. I think it was Marcus Allen also said before that he likes his upside, but he runs too high, so it's hard for him to get through the holes, you know, opposed to someone like Jalen Richard or DeAndre Washington, who are a little smaller, and they can explode through the holes a little quicker. So they get a running back in there to help the offense with Derek. I think it'll be just fine for next year. But like I said, this game turned out just how I expected. Houston's defense was going to shut him down. Brock Osweiler was going to not do anything to beat you, but he did do something to beat you, which was unexpected. So it turned out how I expected. It sucks that the Raiders didn't move on, because that's, you know, they were the favorite going in to the playoffs before Derek went down.
Right.
You know,
right.
Let me. This is the part of the show where Reggie may get mad at me because I'm trying to pawn off players off his favorite team. But, you know, if you're looking for a guy in the same way that Atlanta took who was that running back we had a couple years ago that disappeared?
Michael Turner.
The way that they got Michael Turner from San Diego, and he was a second or third string guy, Terran Ward, who is the third string guy behind Freeman and Coleman over here in Atlanta, might be that guy that has the fresh legs and everything that Oakland may want to target.
Still under contract. Sorry. Next question.
Seriously,
you're right. You're right. I mean, I think that if that guy has big star ability written all over him. I mean, really, he runs hard. He doesn't get hurt. He takes what's given to him. He reads his breaks. He reads his holes. I mean, if the Raiders could somehow figure out a way to get him away from Atlanta, I think that's your starting running back easily. Absolutely.
You know,
I agree with that.
I like your suggestion of Mixon, because, you know, his off the field issues are a big concern, clearly. But the guy, when he plays, he's great. I mean, he's really good at it, Bob Stoops offense with Baker Mayfield. But I just think his off the field stuff with everything going on with him, the Raiders don't want to touch anything like that, because the Raiders have gone through so many issues with stuff like that. And one of the Raiders legends is Fred Biletnikoff, and he, you know, stuff happened with his daughter with domestic abuse and all that stuff. So I don't think the Raiders would want to touch something like that. But
Mixon. Yeah, we were talking to Ron Ward. That's Atlanta's running back.
No, I know. I'm saying, but I didn't mention the whole part when you mentioned Mixon earlier about the draft.
Gotcha.
I just kind of circled back to Mixon, because I just don't think I like him. I like his upside, but I still think the Raiders touch him like that. But yeah, I think Ward would be a great fit in Oakland, but he's under contract, and the Falcons probably won't let him go, because maybe they see something in him, but I don't think the Raiders are going to make that call unless they can get him for something like a seventh round pick. But I don't think so.
Well, of course, leads us to the. You try to do it for Bruce Irvin, Reggie. We know that. But this leads us to the last game we're going to talk about for the night. For everybody who thought maybe we'd talk about all the coaching changes, I figure they're going to be done by next week anyway. So we're going to really attack all the new coaches in new places next week. But the last game we have up here, of course, is the Houston Texans that will be traveling to New England to take on Tom Brady and the Patriots. Cody, who do you have in this one?
No, you know what? I was going to try to come up with some catchy, cliche, you know, ridden, you know, breakdown here of this game. Give me New England by two touchdowns. That's all. I like Bill O'Brien a lot. I think he's a great coach. I think he's doing a great job. He's one of – when you look at him and you think of all of Belichick's disciples that coach in the NFL, is there anyone more successful than Bill O'Brien? Has there been anyone else, like, that, you know, Romy Cornell, McDaniels? Can you think of any of his other guys that have turned out to be, you know, to actually win a playoff game? I know McDaniels won the one with Tebow, but I think O'Brien might be his best disciple. So I like the upside for Houston, but give me New England, you know, two touchdowns. I know they're like a 16-point favorite, but New England's got to win this game. Give me Brady. Give me Patriots Steelers next weekend.
That could be a good one. Reggie, who do you have?
I agree with Cody. I think it's – he said two, I think it's three. I just think that, you know, that mystique of Tom Brady comes out. These guys are chomping at the bit. I mean, Houston's not a terrible team defensively, but when you look at the offense, I think Brock Osweiler, you know, I think that was an anomaly. He won't do that on the Patriots. I think New England wins this big.
All right, that leads us to Coach Hill.
New England, and it will be a clinic. They will be able to use this tape to show you how you can get a lot of yards and dissect the team and just basically – embarrass someone. I mean, New England will come out and they will punch the first touchdown in, and then it will just be touchdown after touchdown after touchdown after touchdown. So this will be a great game. New England all the way.
Reggie said three. I'm going to go four touchdowns. You know, just give me the 28 point win.
Right.
You know, hey, I think it's possible and out there. And obviously, I'm gonna let's go ahead and just hit the button that.
Right.
It's funny because it's true.
Not because I'm a Brady homer or anything like that, but no, I spent all week trying to come up with a good argument for Houston because I'm trying to be a good media person, and I see all sides, and here's the best I come up with for how Houston can lose by three touchdowns and not the five or six that we're going to probably predict by the time this is over. If their defense plays like they did last week, if Jadeveon Clowney, I don't care if J.J. Watt plays or not, it's not going to impact what I'm saying any more or any less. If Jadeveon Clowney becomes the nuisance that he was last week and allows Whitney Mercilus and some of these other guys to come flying up the middle and hit Tom Brady early, because up the middle and in Tom Brady's face hurries him up. It really flutters him more than coming around the edges. You can't edge rush Tom Brady. He'll pretty much laugh at you when he's throwing touchdowns. If they can hit him early, they can hit him hard up the middle, it'll affect it a little bit, but after a while they're just going to hand it off to Blunt or White or some other guy in the backfield we've never heard of that's going to have 17 touchdowns. The Patriots are going to win no matter what, but if Houston got better quarterback play, this will be a lot closer, but it's not going to be close. Like you said, 3, 4, 5 scores.
Listen, Jeremy, if Tom Brady, Garoppolo, LeGarrette Blount, Edelman, if they all get hurt, then maybe they only lose by a touchdown. it's just not possible. I mean, it's good to wait for root for the underdog, but I just can't see it.
Remember, earlier this year, the Patriots did beat Houston with Jacoby Brissett.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, and Jacoby
Brissett.
So that's
their third-string quarterback.
So if they put Brady on the center, if they call me up and have me come play quarterback, then they might lose by a touchdown, or maybe a field goal.
I just can't believe that we're all right, and not just us, a lot of people are writing off a guy that's going to be getting $37 million guaranteed to start for Houston, and everyone's just writing Osweiler off because it's kind of true. The guy just doesn't have it. I mean, I'm no quarterback guru by any stretch of imagination. I'm the biggest backup quarterback fan there is. But, man, this guy just – I don't get how they could throw that kind of money at him and expect him to go out there and win games. So I'm like, yeah, your defense is going to carry you. That's kind of what they did this year. But, I mean, he makes some throws, and some of the throws he makes, it's like, how's this guy an NFL starting quarterback?
It's all between the ears, man. He doesn't even play or have the swagger of a starting quarterback. I mean, it's – hey – you know what? Kudos to his agent. I said that when he signed the deal. Because, you know, hey, that's the name of the game, is get as much as you can.
Absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, piggyback on that, they fleeced Houston. And it always makes you wonder how much, say, did Bill O'Brien have in this signing? Because they said that Bill O'Brien already spoke to them when they signed him. So this had to be all Rick Smith and, you know, Bob McNair's decision to bring him in and not even consult your head coach about it, because he just doesn't strike as a guy that fits O'Brien's system. I mean, O'Brien, when he coached at Penn State, had Matt McGloin, who he turned into a serviceable NFL quarterback, and then from the year he took
there he is.
You know, I'm saying, you bring him in, you think he's going to be a franchise quarterback, he gets benched towards the end of the season for Tom Savage, who barely could carry the – I mean, he started at Pitt, but the guy never – you know, he's nothing special. So you bench your franchise quarterback for a guy that shouldn't even be a starter in the league also. And then, you know, what does that mean? It just makes you wonder how much say Bill O'Brien had in this whole conversation bringing Brock to Houston.
Right.
Absolutely. But, you know, we talked about all the games. I thought we did pretty well. It was fantastic having Warren and Sean join us. Cody, you might want to try to get them on over there, because I felt like we had a fantastic show. This is by far the most loaded show and the most people we've ever had on at the same time. And I know I had a blast. I know you guys did too.
Absolutely.
Oh,
Jeremy, great. I got one more question for Cody. Cody, now that we're starting to see everything pan out, who's your pick for San Francisco's quarterback?
Quarterback? Oh, geez.
I'm sorry. Quarterback.
No.
That's my second question. Coach is number one, but quarterback's my second question.
Well, okay. Now that Sean McVay is now the new head coach in L.A. and Anthony Lynn I don't know if you guys saw Anthony Lynn's going to be the coach
mm-hmm.
of the Chargers. All signs point towards I hate to say it because he's based on there, but all signs point towards Kyle Shanahan to be the next head coach of the Niners. That family name carries history with the Niners, with his dad being the OC during the 49ers Super Bowl runs in the 90s. Maybe his dad comes in as an executive. I'd like to see Kyle here as the head coach, and then you can maybe bring in a Lewis Riddick to be the GM. And
ooh.
I can trust him to maybe mentor a quarterback because he can do it. I mean, look what he's done with Matt Ryan and some of the other guys he's had. If I had to pick a quarterback that they're going to get, I don't like any of the kids in the draft. I still think the draft – I mean, Deshaun Watson had a really good national title game. I think he has good upside. I don't think he's worth number two. If I'm the Niners and this guy doesn't resign with this team, I'm throwing the bank at Kirk Cousins to come to Santa Clara.
Well,
oh, wow.
Two things there in that wherever Kyle Shanahan goes, I feel like Kirk Cousins is going to go with him because they are good buddies. He did, pretty much Cousins is making all that money because Kyle Shanahan put him in a system to succeed.
No, I agree. And Sean McVay did a really nice job with him, too, the last couple
yes.
years. I mean, Cousins, the year Cousins had last year was phenomenal. This year, they couldn't win that big game. It was a little disappointing to see them not get in the playoffs after having all you had to go out and beat the Giants like C squad, and they couldn't even do it. But I'm with you. I think if Shanahan comes to the Niners, which unless they royally screw this up, which they're known of screwing things up with head coaches, I think Shanahan's here. That means Cousins will be here if he doesn't sign with the Redskins. And ultimately, their GM, I don't know what they're going to do, but I think it should be Lewis Riddick is a very interesting choice for them because he has some local ties here. He played for the Niners, and him being on ESPN, he has a lot of inside stuff, and he also worked with the Eagles before, so he has a scouting experience. I think those two should be the combo. They'd work well together. And then you have Kirk Cousins here to hopefully maybe in 6 years make this team win four games.
Oh wow.
Well, and the other thing I was going to add, and it kind of reflects on not only the 49ers and you, Cody, but also on you, Reggie, and the Falcons. The Falcons actually benefited from being this deep in the playoffs because, Kyle Shanahan could have had his pick of a lot of these jobs, but they couldn't hire him. And a lot of these franchises are so desperate that they reached out early and tried to grab their guy, whoever was available. So, I mean, Kyle Shanahan could have easily been a lot of places, but I feel like the 49ers are the better fit for him, whether his dad comes in or not, whether he gets Kirk Cousins or not. I feel like he's at that spot where he can fix what's going on with them, and he still has a few pieces he can play with.
Well, I think what hurts them, the Niners, the most, too, is they royally screwed up with not hiring Adam Gase to be the coach couple years ago when they went with Tom Sula. So I don't think they want to make that same mistake by letting a young, brilliant offensive mind like someone like Kyle Shanahan go like they did with Gase. And that set them back a couple of years by bringing in Tom Sula. I think I mentioned this last week. I think they cut Chip short way too early. 1 year was not enough for him with the system that the players of Balky put in front of him to try to build that system. I think Chip was Chip should have been given more time. He's an offensive genius. I mean, he really is. And it's unfortunate that happened. But bring in Shanahan, see what they can do. He's young. The players aren't responding to him better. He has a family name. And it might bring back that aura around the 49ers, hopefully sooner than later.
Absolutely. And I hope everybody had as much fun tonight as I know we did. Once again, shout out to Hall of Famer and Seahawks radio broadcaster Warren Moon for joining us early on. And obviously, Sean Sharif from 105.3, the Fan, the voice of the Dallas Metroplex. I'm glad at least me and his mom voted for him. It'll make him feel better, I guess, and maybe he can hold that over his coworkers. But Cody, it was great having you on again. Reggie, it was great as always having you on. We'll see you guys next week. And shout out to Coach who had to drop off a second ago. But for everybody involved tonight, I'm Jeremy the Impact York. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Oh. Was that not clear without the bam? Yeah, okay. Bam! What?